We're coming today to look at this chapter 17 in Revelation under the title, Babylon, the Great Prostitute. I want to start with a quote from Dominic Smart, Sally, who passed away not so long ago. And this is what he says about the book of Revelation. Revelation is a really simple book. There's a lot to it, but it is really basically simple. Revelation is about the victory of the Lamb over all that opposes God and the saints, so that the saints are encouraged faithfully to continue as lampstands. If you have got that, you've got Revelation in a nutshell. And so, I think that is a very helpful thing. And it's a thing I've been saying, hopefully, again and again, that the book of Revelation is about the victory of the Lamb over all that opposes him. And it's written in a practical way to encourage God's people to persevere going through days of trial. And if we've got it in a nutshell. Now, the latter part of the book of Revelation focuses on two cities, Babylon and Zion. These two cities are also pictured as two women, Babylon as the great prostitute and Zion as the bride of Christ. Now, let me carefully, and I mean carefully, explain the word prostitute for the boys and girls so the mums and dads don't have to do it. And don't worry, you don't have to turn the TV off for the little ones. And now, boys and girls, this is what a prostitute is. A prostitute is someone who pleases people, not because she cares for people, but because she wants to get something from them. She will please people in order to lead them away from doing what is right. So she is a person who pleases people, but pleases them for the wrong reasons, because she's selfish and because she's evil. And this Babylon today is spoken of as being like that. Now, as we think of Babylon today, let's think first of all of Babylon's identity. Now, the word Babylon comes from the word Babel, which we first meet in Genesis 11 in the story of the people of the world seeking to build a great tower that would reach into heaven. In Genesis 11, 4, we read, "Then they said, 'Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth.'" Now, these people combined two serious sins. First of all, pride. They said, "Let us reach to heaven." In other words, let us reach right up to God. And rebellion. "Let's build a city and this tower so we'll not be scattered." God had told them to scatter, to spread over the whole face of the earth. And so they're rebelling against God. So pride and rebellion are two traits which would be characteristic of Babylon right down through the ages. In that region where that tower was built, later on there would develop a very powerful empire called Babylon. It came to its height about 600 years before Jesus was born under the rule of King Nebuchadnezzar, who came and conquered Jerusalem, destroyed the city, destroyed the temple, and carried the people of the city, the likes of Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, carried them off to be slaves in Babylon. Now, the empire of Babylon was soon overtaken by the kingdom of the Medes and Persians. Remember the writing on the wall, King Belshazzar? That was the last night of Babylon. The Medes and the Persians took over. Babylon disappeared as a kingdom, but its name would remain as a symbol of opposition to the people of God. And in John's day, the use of the word Babylon here would have been seen as pointing to the sin and the corruption of the Roman Empire. I think this can be particularly seen if you look at verses 9 and 10, where John says, "This calls for a mind with wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains in which the woman is seated. There are also seven kings, five of whom have fallen. One is, the other has yet to come. And when he does come, he must remain only a little while." And scholars say that those those verses fit very well with the different Roman emperors who were about at that time. And so in John's day, the term Babylon would point to Rome. But this is a key thing. Babylon represents different things at different ages in history. When we have prophecy, as indeed this is prophecy, and prophecy in the Old Testament, often there are different layers to the prophecy. Often there is a layer which is indeed fulfilled almost immediately, and often there's a layer that is fulfilled later on. For example, some of David's prophecies about the Messiah would be partly fulfilled in himself, but partly would be fulfilled many years later. There's different layers of it. Eric Alexander, was a tremendous Scottish preacher. He says this: Babylon is a symbol of all godless society. We dare not narrow it down to something too specific. So Babylon, the great prostitute, is speaking about society organized against God. Leon Morris, who was an Australian Bible scholar, says this: the great city is every city and yet no city. It is civilized man organized apart from God and against God. It has its embodiment in every age. Babylon is the world as the center of seduction at any moment of history. The harlot Babylon always opposes the bride, which is Jerusalem. In the first century, Rome was a striking example of the city of man bent on his own blasphemous way, opposing with all its might the things of God. And so Babylon is indeed organized society working against God, working against God's people. Babylon is pictured here as riding on the beast. Now this beast, if you go back a few chapters, is the beast of the sea. Now let me just recap for a moment or two about the beast here. We were introduced back in chapter 12 to the dragon, who is the devil, who attacks the woman and the child, the woman representing the church, the child representing Jesus. Then in chapter 13, we come across two of the devil's agents who would do his work. There's the beast of the sea, which represents godless governments, and the beast of the land, who represents false religion. Now, we know about the Holy Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Here we have an unholy Trinity of evil: the dragon, the devil, the beast of the sea, unholy government, and the beast of the land, which is false religion. And these forces combine to create Babylon, the anti-God society in the world, the anti-God society in the world in every generation. This society has the hallmarks of the people of Babel: arrogant, proud, and rebellious against the Almighty. So that's who Babylon is. It's anti-God society, which is right around us. We live in Babylon. Babylon is this world opposed to Christ, opposed to Christ's people. It's where we live even now. But secondly, we have Babylon's immorality. Let me read a few verses here. First of all, halfway down verse 1, John says, "Come, I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute who is seated on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed sexual immorality, and with the wine of whose sexual immorality the dwellers on earth have become drunk." And then go down halfway down verse 4, "In her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the impurities of sexual immorality. And on her forehead was written a name of mystery: Babylon the Great, mother of prostitutes and of earth's abominations." And over to chapter 18 and verse 3, "For all nations have drunk the wine of the passion of her sexual immorality, and the kings of the earth have committed immorality with her." Babylon is immoral and causes others to act in a terribly immoral manner as well. She is described here both as a prostitute and as the mother of prostitute. her immorality is contagious. It's infectious. Paul, in dealing with such immorality and writing to the Corinthians, speaks of it as being like leaven. In the preparation of bread, leaven works through the whole dough so that the impact affects every part of the bread as it all will rise. And in speaking of this sin of immorality, Paul points out it's different from other sin. He says, flee from sexual immorality. Every other sin a person commits is outside the body, but the sexual immoral person sins against his own body. And Paul is teaching there's a depth to this sin. It's deeper than any other sin. It's so much more dangerous because of this depth that there is to it. But sadly, we see here, it's a hallmark of Babylon. It's widespread in Babylon, this terrible immorality. Widespread in John's day, widespread today in the day as we live in. But this is something those who belong to Zion, those who belong to the New Jerusalem, those who belong to Jesus, the bride of Christ, we must flee from all such immorality. But I think there is a very clear argument that the immorality of Babylon is symbolic of spiritual immorality, which is idolatry. Indeed, so often sexual immorality and idolatry would go hand in hand in Bible times. Idolatry is giving your trust, which is due to God alone, to anyone or anything else. Idolatry is giving worship, which is due to God alone, to anyone or anything else. Idolatry is giving allegiance, which is due to God alone, to anything or anyone else. Idolatry is failing to give God his rightful first place in our lives. And if we fail to do that, we are spiritual adulterers. Those who belong to Babylon may have a place for God in their lives. And this is the scary thing. Those who belong to Babylon may have a place for God in their lives. God has a part in their lives, but definitely doesn't have the first place. Those who belong to Zion, those who belong to the bride of Christ, they're pure, which means they're single-minded, which means they give Christ the first place in every area of their lives. If we fail to do this, we might seem respectable, we might be religious, we might be good Presbyterians, but in reality, we will be spiritual prostitutes if we claim to have God in our lives, but really our affection is given to other things instead. And so we have Babylon's immorality. Thirdly, we have Babylon's luxury. Look there at verse 4 of chapter 17. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with golden jewels and pearls and holding in her hand a golden cup full of the abominations and impurities of her sexual immorality. There was a luxurious splendor here about Babylon. So much so that at the end of verse 6 and into chapter 7, or verse 7, sorry, John marveled at Babylon. He just marveled at her. He was swept away by the splendor of her being. And he was rebuked. Don't marvel at her. There's a glory, there's a splendor about her, which will carry people away. Babylon has a luxurious look because material things matter so much to her. It speaks of how the merchants of the earth in chapter 18 have grown rich from Babylon's luxurious living. Materialism, which is living first for material things, the material things of this world, is at the heart of those who belong to Babylon. The material is more important than the spiritual. The needs of the body, the pleasures of this world, take priority over the needs of the soul. The dangers of materialism were a common theme of the Old Testament prophets. Let's think of Haggai, who was involved in seeing that the temple was rebuilt. This is what Haggai says. You looked for much, and behold, it came to little. And when you brought it home, I blew it away. Why, declares the Lord of hosts? Because of my house that lies in ruins, while each of you busies himself with his own house. Therefore, the heavens above you have withheld the dew, and the earth has withheld its produce. And Haggai is saying, there's a curse upon you, the people of his day. You won't build God's temple. It's lying in ruins, but you're busy building your own fine and beautiful houses. You're putting your efforts into your own things. You're not putting your effort into the things of God. That's why you're not receiving the blessing that you could have in life. Jesus also warned about this materialism, living for the things of this world. He said, no one can serve two masters. For either he'll hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Now, Jesus makes it very clear. You cannot have him first in our lives and have such a love for money that it controls you. Think of the story of the rich young ruler. A good man, an upright man. He agreed with so much that Jesus said. But when it came to the test of selling what he had and giving to the poor, it was soon obvious that money was the real god of his life. He was an idolater. He was living for the things of this world. What do you live for? Is building a nice house? Is having a good bank account? Is having loads of nice possessions? Are those things more important than having treasures in heaven, which come from knowing Christ and serving Christ? Those who belong to Babylon live for the things of this world. And then fourthly, we have Babylon's militancy. Militancy, struggle to say that word. And look there in verse 6 what it says here about Babylon. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. This is a graphic portrayal of Babylon's attack on Christians. It comes from its war against the Lamb spoken of in verse 14. Babylon is very liberal in regards to its morals. People are given freedom to live almost any way they want. They're given the freedom to sin. But there's little liberality towards the people of God. Being drunk with the blood of the saints speaks of Babylon being consumed and addicted to opposing God's people. There's something about God's people that raises its hackles, and it just has to carry out its attacks on the people of God. Now, let's always remember this. Babylon is controlled by the dragon, the devil, and his beasts, the things in this world that he controls. The devil, who is consumed by hatred for Christ and his people, is always working behind the scenes, prejudicing society against God's people. And this reminds us again and again what Paul says, writing to the Ephesians. Our battle is not against flesh and blood. There's a spiritual battle. There are spiritual forces at work. Spiritual forces at work in government. Spiritual forces at work in religion. Spiritual forces at work in society, working against Christ and working against God's people. And that's why one of the most important things we must do as Christians, Paul teaches, pray. You will not defeat what's happening in the world unless you pray, and pray for the power of God and the spiritual forces of good to oppose these spiritual forces of evil. Babylon's militancy is seen in the attack on those who hold the biblical values and also to oppose the spread of gospel work. Babylon is happy for us to be Jesus freaks as long as we hide away, do it in our own weak corner, and keep quiet. Babylon's happy with that. But when we dare to seek to spread the gospel, particularly as we seek to reach into new ground with the gospel, the dragon stirs up Babylon to strike out. I remember recently speaking to someone who's very involved in five-day clubs, even in this area. And one of the things this person has noticed is that when you're doing five-day clubs, quite often you're used to apathy. People not caring if their kids go or not. But now there is a militant opposition in some places, and we've found that even ourselves. People do not want Bible clubs in their area. There's a real pressure on many schools to cut down the Christian stuff in the schools. We need to pray for our schools. There was something even a few years ago in one of the GB courses in speaking about sexuality, and it wasn't in this area, but people were up in arms at what was being taught in GB. They were teaching what the Bible says, and people hated it. This is the militancy of Babylon. A friend of mine who's a minister, a number of years ago, he was doing a funeral. And when he began to preach, the girlfriend of the man who died spoke up and says, "We don't want this gospel stuff in the middle of the service." And this friend of mine very quickly reminded her where she was. This is such and such a Presbyterian church, and this is what we do, if you don't mind. We need to be graciously firm in these days. We need to be graciously firm, but not compromise an inch in this. When Babylon wants to stop us from being faithful to biblical teaching and morals, when Babylon wants to stop us from doing the work of spreading the gospel, we must not compromise. We must say with what Martin Luther said all those years ago when he was told basically to recant of what he believed and to stop his preaching. He says, "Here I stand. I can do no other. So help me God." We need to realize that the attacks of Babylon, this militancy, is going to increase likely. We need the spirit of Luther that says, the spirit of Ezekiel, who was told to have a head like flint, hard-headed. We need to be graciously hard-headed and say, no, we're not going to change from what God has called us to be and to do. I need to remember what is spoken of here. Judgment will come on Babylon for her attacks on God's people. And this leads us just to our final point today, which is Babylon's destruction in verses 15 to 17. Babylon presents herself as so beautiful, so wise, so glorious. She presents herself as if she's going to live forever, to exist for eternity. But here we have a gruesome, and I mean a gruesome, picture of her destruction in verse 16. "And the 10 horns, representing 10 kings, that you saw, they and the beasts will hate the prostitute. They will make her desolate and naked, and devour her flesh and burn her up with fire." The beast, which initially controls Babylon, ends up destroying her. And we see here the self-destructive nature of sin. In a sense, sin can't help itself. It will always, in the end, be destructive. Satan offers the world so much, but then, driven by a hatred for mankind, Satan brings, in the end, misery and death to those who listen to his lies. And let me say this to anyone who's listening who's not a Christian. The devil is controlling you. You're following the ways of the devil. But this is what the devil will do in the end. He will work for your downfall. He will work indeed to destroy you because he hates what you represent. You're made in the image of God. He despises you and wants you enslaved in a sin. He wants you destroyed. If you look at the history of the various Babylons, the different empires that have ruled the world down through the centuries, a time that seems so glorious, a time that seems even eternal, but in the end, corruption, immorality, and inward division leads to their collapse. And that is repeated again and again and again. Babylonian society, society based on sin, based on the leading of the devil, in the end will collapse, will destroy itself. Sin and evil have their day, but sin and evil in the end will be stopped. Verse 17 teaches here that in this self-destruction of evil, in Babylon's fall, the hand of God is at work. This reminds me again of Psalm 2, which seems to come through so much of Revelation. This world which shakes its fist at God, this world which scoffs at God, this world, this society which mocks God, which opposes the things of God, shakes its fist at God. And what does the one enthroned in the heavens do? He laughs with derision. He just laughs at them thinking, you can take me on and win. He scoffs at that, God does. And then in his time, his wrath will be poured out. And you know, it's so important that you're not a child of Babylon, because Babylon will be destroyed. The things of this world will pass away. God will have his way. So let me quickly recap what we've seen today. We've seen Babylon's identity. It is this anti-God society of every generation. We've seen Babylon's immorality, physical and spiritual immorality, which is idolatry. Babylon's luxury, materialism, living for the things of this world. Babylon's militancy, a hatred of Christ, a hatred of his people. And Babylon's destruction, sin's self-destructive nature. The big challenge for each of us is, do our lives show allegiance to Babylon or to Zion, to the world or to Christ? Yes, we live in Babylon. We live in a world which is anti-God. Our society is anti-God, but we must not be Babylonians. We should have the outlook, the values, and the ways of Zion. We're not to be entrapped by the world, but rather, for Christ's sake, we're to count the things of this as rubbish. The things of this world as rubbish compared to the joy of knowing Christ. We're to be in the world, but not of the world. Jesus prays in John 17, he says to the Father, don't take them out of the world, but protect them from the evil one. To protect them from being sucked into the ways of the world. And what we need to do is think, our attitudes, our desires, our ambitions, our thinking, how we live, what we live for, the way we live, is it controlled by the ways of Babylon, the ways of this world? Or is it controlled by Christ, his word, the ways of Zion? Those who are controlled by the ways of this world will pass away with this world into everlasting judgment. Those who are controlled by the ways of Christ will reign with Christ forever. What a thought. Let's live for Zion and not for Babylon. Amen.